the time. It's just that the focus shifts around. You're a good person, Scarlet Crowley. Even though I'd heard it many times by now, the name sounded strange to my ears. You're a good person, Bridger McCauley. I'll try to believe it if you'll do the same. It's a deal, I told him. Chapter 17. A lot of shifts at the coffee counter. Scarlet. Wow, Bridger said. That has to be him. He looks just like you. I looked out of the coffee shop window to see my uncle striding toward the double glass doors. I hadn't spent enough time with Brian to bother checking for a resemblance. But it was true. My uncle and I had the same indecisive eye color, and the same wave to our hair. You're right, I said. That's him. Bridger stood up. He'd dressed up in khakis and a button-down shirt today, but there was no hiding the exhaustion in his eyes. Brian pushed through the doors, his gaze immediately scoping laser-like onto me. In a few long strides, he'd reached me, pulling me against his chest in a powerful embrace. My God, you're all grown up. He laughed, but the sound was sad. So tall. He inhaled deeply and then stepped back, still holding my arms and just staring at me. Thank you for coming, I said, feeling suddenly shy. Anytime. This is Bridger, I said as Brian released me. They shook hands and Brian sat down, but I didn't. I'm going to get coffee for everyone. What do you drink? I asked my uncle. He put a hand on my arm, giving me a gentle squeeze. Coffee, black, one sugar packet. Thank you, sweetie. By the time I got back, they were deep in discussion, and Bridger had begun to take notes on the pad in front of him. You have a real shot at guardianship, Uncle Brian said. You're old enough, with great prospects and no criminal record. If a teacher will stand up in the courtroom and tell the judge that you've done a great job this year, that will help too. Bridger wrote third grade teacher on his notebook. Mrs. Rose is great, and she'll help us. But I just don't see why a judge would approve me, Bridger said. You're looking at it the wrong way, Brian insisted. They want to keep families together. It's good common sense, and it saves the state money. It sounds like your biggest obstacle is housing.
That's where the dean comes in, I put in. He'll help you figure out your options.
Bridger was still frowning. Even if they help me find somewhere legal to live, it will cost money, which I don't have. A judge wants to see some income, no? The money isn't as important as you think, Brian said. Lucy has her own income, right? Her Social Security benefit will cover a lot of expenses.
Bridger's face was blank.
Your father has passed, correct? And Lucy is under 18. She's entitled to his survivor's benefit, and now your mother's. But my parents weren't retired when they died, Bridger said.
Uncle Brian shook his head.
Makes no difference. If any working adult dies leaving a minor child, the child earns a benefit until she turns 18. Did you ever see any mail coming into your house from the Social Security Administration?
Bridger's eyes went wide.
Yeah, I did. That was Lucy's check. Fuck. My mother probably spent it on.
Bridger let the sentence die, dropping his head into his hands. Brian put a hand on his shoulder.
That's your ticket to providing for her. The judge will already know that. But how did I not know that? Bridger asked the tabletop.
Because you don't ask anyone for help. Somehow I managed to keep that sentiment to myself, but it wasn't easy.
How much money are we talking about? Bridger asked. It depends on how many years your parents paid into Social Security. More than $1,000 a month, though.
My boyfriend's eyes opened wide.
Damn, that's a lot of shifts at the coffee counter. You'll have to contact the Social Security Administration, Brian said. They need to know about your mother's death.
Bridger picked up his pen.
I'll add it to the list.
By the time Bridger's notes reached the bottom of the page, Brian had him feeling cautiously optimistic.
If the college helped me with housing, I might not have to drop out, he said. Dropping out should be your very last resort, Brian said, his voice gentle. Now, if you'd consider completing your degree before you petitioned for guardianship.
Bridger was shaking his head before Brian even got the words out.
I'm not waiting. I can't look Lucy in the eye and tell her that I feel like finishing school before she gets out of there.
Brian was silent for a moment, and I could see him choosing his words carefully.
I know she's important to you, but there's a big difference between the job you could get right now and the job you can get 18 months from now. It's not selfish to wait. Your sister would also benefit from a Harkness diploma on your wall.
Bridger rubbed his temples.
I get that, I do. But she benefits more by not being in the system for 2 years. I'm sure that there are good foster parents in the world, but you can't tell me that there aren't any creepers out there.
My uncle's eyes pinched shut for a second, and I saw him take a deep breath.
She's lucky to have you.
My uncle didn't press Bridger about his choices after that, and I loved him for it. I could tell just from a couple of hours in his presence that he was probably a kick-ass social worker. There was a calm way about him, and a lack of judgment. Basically, he was the complete opposite of my father.
How soon do you think I can get a hearing? Bridger asked.
I'm going to find that out for you while you meet with the dean, Brian said. You'll need a lawyer, of course. The Harkness Law School probably has a pro bono program. I'll try to find a phone number on it.
God, could this ever work?
Bridger asked, his eyes flashing with emotion. Brian stood up.
I've stood in a lot of courtrooms with people who wanted custody of their kids, and I'd say you look like a better candidate than about 90% of them.
But how many of them win? Bridger grumbled.
Lots, Brian answered. Now I'm going to the courthouse to poke around and ask questions. You're meeting the dean, and Scarlett is going to study for her exams.
I am? I asked. Concentrating on schoolwork right now sounded impossible. Bridger kissed me on the cheek.
We can't both flunk out. I'll call you as soon as I know more.
Bridger. Hey! Hartley was waiting for me outside Dean Darling's office, a somber expression on his face. Hey, thanks for coming. Anytime, he said, pushing off the wall. You ready? Let's do this, I said with more bravado than I felt. Hartley turned the old brass doorknob and ducked into the dean's ancient little office suite. I felt like I was walking to my doom. Since July, I'd been pretending that I could pull it off, that I could take care of Lucy and be a full-time student like everybody else. I wasn't looking forward to being told to lower my expectations. Dean Darling's secretary waved us inside, coming around her desk to take my hand.
Oh, honey, she said. I'm so sorry for your loss.
Thank you, Shirley. This is all feeling way too familiar. When my father died, I walked around with a tight throat for a month as each neighbor and teacher in my life tried to comfort me. It never worked. The dean's office door opened and the man himself beckoned to us. Hartley and I filed past him, taking seats in the spindly old wooden chairs opposite his desk. I'd never had to sit here before, thank God. Until this semester, my academic career at Harkness had been smooth sailing. Not anymore.
I am very sorry to hear that you have lost your mother, the dean began.
He had a fusty British accent. Thank you, sir.
Please know that your final exams should be the last thing on your mind right now. You will take them whenever you are ready to do so. I've already reached out to your professors.
Thank you. I wondered how accommodating he was going to sound in a minute when I told him just how messy my life really was.
I read in your file this morning that your father is already deceased. Do you have other relatives in the area? I ask because I'm worried for all the things you might be expected to take care of. A death is not only devastating, but comes with a great load of bureaucratic hassle. There is a funeral to plan and decisions to be made. Is there anyone who will help you with that?
The dean put his elbows on the desk and studied me.
There are...
I started. Shit. There are bigger problems than that. My sister has been placed with social services, and I have to get her back. The dean's face softened.
I was going to ask about Lucy next. Her name is also in your file.
Yeah. This semester, I've been... I scratched the back of my neck.
Just spit it out, bro,
Hartley whispered. So I did. I told the dean that I'd had Lucy with me in my room at Beaumont since July, and that getting her back was going to have to take precedence over everything, including, unfortunately, my next term at Harkness. And while I told my whole sordid tale, he watched me with a calm expression on his face. They probably teach that at dean school, how to listen to fucked up situations without scowling. When I finished, it was quiet for a moment. He set down the gold pen he'd been fiddling with and said,
I wondered about the pink bicycle in the rack.
Then he leaned back in his chair and folded his arms behind his head.
What you want is not an easy thing.
I know, I grumbled. The judge is gonna laugh me out of there. Dean Darling moved quickly, slapping his hands onto the desk blotter.
Dear boy, that is not true, and that is not what I meant. It's not an easy thing to be a student and take care of a child.
I just shrugged. I'm already doing that. Taking care of an 8-year-old is a piece of cake. It's not like when she was little, and I had to follow her around all day making sure she didn't swallow pennies. Dean Darling toyed with his tidy beard for a moment before speaking again.
You make a fine point, and it's obvious that you have more experience with child care than I do. However, raising a girl into her teenage years would not be easy, and you'd be making every decision alone.
Bridger shrugged. I'm going to be involved no matter what. If the state says she has to live with someone else, that only makes it harder. It will limit the jobs I can take after graduation if I have to stick close by. I'm not... This isn't a whim for me, sir. It's my life. The dean's voice was quiet when he spoke next.
A few times a year, I have a student in my office sitting in that chair whose problems are vast, and usually there isn't a thing I can do about it. Often the student's academic effort has lapsed so badly that it's too late. Occasionally, there have been mind-altering substances paid for with his father's money, and he wants me to fix it all.
For a moment, the dean turned his head to look out the window into the courtyard. Then he turned to face me again.
Then we have you, Bridger McCauley. You have a thick file with nothing in it but achievements, and no sign that anyone ever made that easier. Except for friends like Mr. Hartley here, another of our hard-working achievers.
I glanced at Hartley and found my friend watching the dean intently. Like me, he didn't have a clue where this was going.
Shelley!
The dean called in a loud voice. A moment later, the door sprang open and her face appeared.
Yes?
I need you to find me a law school professor who hasn't left town for the holidays. Start with Blackwell or Potter. We're going to need some legal advice, and one of those gents will know whom to ask.
She closed the door and disappeared.
Bridger,
the dean began, and my name sounded more highbrow in his accent. We are not going to throw up our hands and let you walk away from your Harkness degree. I have never solved this particular problem for a student before, but if it can be done, we will find a way. He took a binder off his bookshelf and flipped it open. There is something called married student housing. You may qualify for an apartment there if you have a minor child in your care.
Dean Darling picked up his phone. I'm going to ask the Dean of Graduate Studies. One moment.
Hartley gave me a light smack on the arm with the back of his hand.
There you go,
he said under his breath.
It's not a done deal yet,
I cautioned myself. But a bubble of hope had already begun to swell inside my chest. While the dean made his call, I tried to tamp it back down. Chapter 18. Approach the Bench. Bridger. The weekend was a blur of phone calls, meetings with lawyers, and visits to Lucy. While the rest of the student body hunkered down in the libraries, Scarlett and I survived on coffee and practically lived out of her car. But it was all worth it. On Monday morning, the lawyer that Dean Darling hooked me up with secured an emergency court date for the next afternoon. That left Scarlett and I pacing around my room, frantically phoning everyone involved.
Brian is going to come to the hearing,
Scarlett said after hanging up with him. She handed me my phone. Thank God it's in the late afternoon, I said, so Lucy's teacher can be there. I left two messages for the dean already. I'm almost ready to storm his office if he doesn't call me back.
He will,
Scarlett said, kissing me on top of the head.
This is all going to work. Brian wanted to remind you to make sure you have something to wear that's appropriate for court.
Aw, fuck. I looked down at myself. Old jeans? Check. Faded Harkness t-shirt? Check. My girlfriend laughed.
Do you own a suit? Or are we driving to the mall right now?
I have a good sport coat and pants, but my ties are all stained.
That's easy. We don't even have to leave town for a tie. How about a good shirt?
Define good, I said. Scarlett tugged me out of my desk chair.
Come on. Time to go shopping.
Right now?
Show me some hustle, Macaulay. There's not much time before the buzzer. You look great,
Scarlett promised me the next afternoon while straightening my tie. But I was too busy trying not to sweat through my shirt to agree with her. Let's go, I said.
Brian is waiting for you on Elm Street,
she said, shrugging on her coat. I held my room door open for Scarlett to pass. Waiting for us, right? She paused on the landing, shaking her head.
I can't go with you.
Why not? She'd worked tirelessly with me these past few days. I couldn't imagine why she wouldn't want to see the outcome.
Think about it,
she whispered.
I'm not vain enough to imagine the judge will recognize me, but if there's even a tiny chance that some reporter hanging around at the courthouse knew who I was, you don't need that. You don't want the name Ellison associated with your custody case. Plus, my phone is going to show me sitting at the library while you're in court.
Scarlett, can we please get rid of that crap on your phone now? Would you cut those assholes loose so I can stop worrying about you?
Soon,
she promised, her eyes flicking away from me. I wanted to argue, but I was out of time. So I kissed her instead and went off to find her uncle.
Always refer to a judge as Your Honor, Brian reminded me.
Right. I'd probably watched enough cop shows to keep that straight. It's just that my head was buzzing with anxiety as we walked into the courtroom. There were more people inside than I expected to see. Jesus. They were all there for me. Hartley and his mother sat together on a bench next to the men's hockey coach, of all people. Lucy's teacher nodded to me from the other side of the aisle, where she was seated with Dean Darling. Andy Bashnagel and his parents sat behind them. Holy fuck. At least I wouldn't have to tell anyone the bad news after I got shot down. My young lawyer beckoned me over to take a seat in front.
I'll be speaking for you, but allow me to introduce you to the head of the litigation department at the law school, Judge Blackwell.
I offered my hand. It's good to meet you, sir, I caught myself.
Judge.
Christ. 1 minute into the courtroom and I'd already fucked it up. The older man just chuckled.
As long as the guy is sitting up there, he nodded toward the dais, is Your Honor, then it's all good.
Thank you for coming, I said, although I wasn't entirely sure why he was here.
Dean Darling and I play squash together at this hour of the week, usually, the older man said. Since he had to cancel, I thought I'd come and watch one of my students at his first courtroom appearance.
Thank you, I said again. God, I was nervous. Then I saw Lucy's foster parents appear in the doorway. I looked behind them, but my sister did not appear.
Where's Lucy?
I asked my lawyer.
The child does not attend the hearing, he said quickly. It's too traumatic when things don't work out.
I felt a stab right in the middle of my sternum.
That makes sense,
I said quickly. I yanked at my collar, which suddenly seemed too tight. If the judge said no, I was going to have to make her cry. Again.
Deep breaths, my lawyer said.
All rise for the Honorable Richard Cranmore. It's showtime, the retired judge muttered.
We turned our attention to the front of the room, where a gray-haired man climbed the dais and sat behind the bench.
You may be seated, the clerk said.
The judge opened a file folder in front of him and then looked out into the courtroom.
Good gracious,
he said, fiddling with the reading glasses hanging around his neck.
I've got a dean and half the law school faculty in my courtroom today. Who's minding the college? A low chuckle traveled the room, but I was too busy sweating to find the comment funny. Judge Cranmore scanned the paperwork in front of him. Emergency petition for guardianship, he read. Will Mr. Bridger McCauley please approach the bench? I got up, and my two lawyers followed me. The judge looked up from the file when I came to stand before him. Petition for guardianship of Lucy J. McCauley made by Bridger McCauley. Petitioner's relationship to the minor child is sibling. Is it a full sibling?
Yes, Your Honor, my lawyer said. Their birth certificates are included in the file.
Sorry, yes, the judge said, flipping pages. Supporting documents include statements from the child's school teacher, foster parents, friends of the family. Quite the file you've assembled here.
They're all here today, the lawyer said. The teacher would be happy to speak to you. Her statement describes Lucy's exemplary attendance and participation at school during the months she lived with her brother in his dorm room. I tried not to flinch, but seriously, how did I not foresee that we would end up here?
The judge flipped through the statements in the file and then looked down at me. You're a full-time student. Will you be able to continue your studies with custody of the child?
The lawyer spoke up again. Your Honor, legal guardianship will actually make things easier for Mr. McCauley, as he has been providing full support under strained circumstances. His custodial plan is in the file.
The judge waved a hand. I've reviewed it. I just want to hear it from him.
I swallowed hard. There are only two things I want to do. The first is to make a home for Lucy, and the second is to finish my degree. I might have, arranged things better, but I know I can do both. I've always taken care of her. From my back pocket, I pulled one of the photographs that I'd removed from our house in the fall. It showed Lucy in a baby carrier on my chest while I read a geometry textbook. I'd been 14 when the picture was taken. The judge looked at the picture for a long moment, then he beckoned a social worker toward the bench.
Does the state have any concerns about this potential arrangement?
Housing, Your Honor, the social worker assigned to the case said. But I've been told that the college will provide suitable housing if guardianship is approved.
The judge lifted his eyes to the crowd in front of him. Who would like to speak to that?
Dean Darling stood up.
The McCauley family will be afforded a small two-bedroom apartment in one of our graduate student buildings. Since Mr. McCauley is partway through a master's degree in cell biology, I did not even have to apply much force to the graduate dean's arm to get him to free up a unit. Mr. McCauley's financial aid will cover about two-thirds of the cost, and I am told that the child's survivor's benefits will cover the balance. In addition, a hockey alumnus has generously stepped forward to supply both Mr. McCauley and his ward with a dining hall meal plan for the second semester. Their new apartment has a kitchen, of course, but they will not need to use it until summertime, if they so wish.
That is generous indeed, the judge said, and I had to agree.
What's more, it was shocking. I didn't know any hockey alumni.
Dean Darling cleared his throat.
There are many people here who wish to see our student succeed. He has never asked for our help, but we want him to know that he is welcome to it.
Well then, the judge said with a nod. Then we shall free up another place in our straining foster care system.
My gut stumbled when he said foster care, and so I didn't process the whole sentence. But then his next words sunk in.
Emergency motion for temporary guardianship approved.
Just like on TV, he tapped a gavel against its base.
We'll revisit in 3 months to make sure that all conditions of the custody plan have been met.
I stood there a moment longer, replaying his words in my head, hoping that I'd just heard what I thought I heard. Behind me, Teresa and Hartley let out a cheer.
Scarlett. Tomorrow? I squealed into the phone at Bridger, who was breathless with relief. Why can't you have her back tonight?
Paperwork, he scoffed. But I got to give her the good news myself, over the phone. Aunt Amy and Rich offered to take her to Chuck E. Cheese's to celebrate. And there's nothing like a little bribe to get you over the hump. I laughed. Where are you guys? I'm just walking back to Vanderburg. I'd been in the library, studying for my stats exam.
It took me a while to get out of there, he said. I had to thank a whole lot of people who came to show their support, even though the judge didn't call on anyone except the dean. Now we're parking Brian's car about 1 minute away from you. Wait for us outside?
Sure. I hung up the phone and tried not to feel creeped out by the fact that Bridger's number would pop up on Azan's spy report. Shoving the phone into my purse, I decided that it was time to let Luke take the spyware off. I'd left it on long enough that my father's handlers wouldn't assume that I'd noticed their spying. And it had occurred to me that if I traded up for a newer phone, the transition would look accidental. I was so distracted by my own scheming that I didn't notice who was waiting for me outside of Vanderburg.
Hi, Scarlet.
I lifted my chin to find the district attorney, Madeline Teeter, standing outside my entryway door.
I told you I couldn't talk to you, I said immediately.
I know you did, she said evenly. But if you'll give me 30 seconds, I can explain why I came all the way down here to ask you a single question about the layout of your family home.
The layout of our house?
That piqued my interest, although it didn't make much sense. The police had combed through the place with their search warrants several times after the arrest.
Scarlet,
Bridger arrived, his arm coming around my shoulders. Brian joined us too, flanking my other side.
Who is this?
The prosecutor, Brian supplied. She interviewed me 2 months ago, after which JP's security team followed me around Massachusetts for 3 days.
I can't talk to you, I repeated. If I did, Azan would find out, and then he'd threaten Bridger again, and I would do anything to spare him that heartache.
Your father won't find out, Ms. Teeter said, reading my mind.
We're never putting you on our witness list.
You can't promise me that, I protested. Besides, I'm already on the list.
She shook her head.
That's just a front the defense is putting up. They'll never call you to the stand.
Why not? I asked.
The prosecutor rubbed her hands together.
I'd prefer to explain it to you in the office I'm borrowing downtown.
Explain it to her here, my Uncle Brian said.
Fine. She trained her serious blue eyes on me. I'm not putting you on the stand, because asking a daughter to testify against her father looks desperate, unless the daughter has something crucial to say.
Which I don't, I put in.
I'm sure that's true, she said kindly. If you did, your father's legal team wouldn't dare make you available. But they're not going to call you either, and I can prove it.
Go ahead, Brian said.
The prosecutor pulled a file out of the elegant leather satchel she carried over her arm. Under the other arm was a paper tube, as if she were toting a poster around.
If your father puts you on the stand as a ploy to defend himself, I'm going to call a witness by the name of David Clancy.
That made no sense.
My hockey teammate's father? Why?
Because he, and several others too, gave a deposition about your father's behavior toward you during hockey games, and it is not the kind of thing your father wants a jury to hear.
Your father filled in as your team coach for a couple of games 2 years ago. Do you remember that?
I nodded, steeling myself. Our regular coach had been out of town for a funeral, and with Dad in charge, I'd been a wreck. Those games did not go well for me, and now both my boyfriend and my uncle were going to hear the gory details.
The witness said that you gave up 2 goals within 3 minutes, and your father was heard to shout.
This next part was going to be even more humiliating than my hockey errors.
You stupid little bitch. Only a whore could get herself fucked so hard as you just did.
Beside me, Bridger's body went absolutely solid, and Uncle Brian cursed under his breath.
That sounds really bad out of context, I said, my face getting hot.
Out of context? Bridger's voice was tight. There is no context in which that is an acceptable thing to say to your child.
I was 16, I said pointlessly. I don't know why I gave even a half-hearted defense of my father. Maybe because I felt like an idiot for living with a man who would say those things to me, without realizing that he was capable of far worse. Beside me, Uncle Brian bent down to put his hands on his knees, dropping his head.
"Are you okay?" Bridger asked, looking down at him. "Give me a minute," he muttered.
"Please, Scarlet," the prosecutor said. "I will only ask you questions about the layout of your home, and your uncle can sit in on the interview. If you don't like the questions, you can just get up and leave. But I need this, and the boys who were victims need this." My father had called me a whore in front of a few hundred people, but those boys got much worse. "Okay," I heard myself say. "The office is on South Street," she said.
"We just came from there," Bridger said.
Brian straightened up, his face red and strained.
"I guess we're going back."
10 minutes later, I found myself sitting in a little government conference room, which the prosecutor had borrowed from her colleagues in the Harkness County Prosecutor's Office. The tube she'd been carrying under her arm proved to be a detailed architectural floor plan of my New Hampshire home. She and her assistant spread it out on the table. "I need to ask you about your basement," Ms. Teeter said. "It doesn't seem very basement-like." "Well, it's a walkout," I supplied, pointing at the drawing. "These sliding glass doors open into the backyard. The house is on a slope, so only one side of the basement is really underground." "And there aren't any walls or partitions down there?" she asked. I shook my head. "The drawing is accurate." She nodded. "Tell us about this utility space." She pointed at the little mechanical room under the stairs. "Is it roomy?" "Not at all," I said. "You can barely get in there. My mother has always kept her Christmas wrapping paper in there, but I discovered it when I was in the second grade." Brian let out a strangled chuckle and pinched the sides of his nose.
"Is it insulated?" the prosecutor pressed.
"If someone was in there, could you hear it?" "There's no way it's insulated," I said. "Why are you asking me this?" She sighed. "There are some old stories about a basement, or a dungeon, but there's nothing dungeon-like in your house. In fact, there isn't even a door on your basement." That was true. It was all very airy and open. "This has bothered me," the prosecutor confessed, "because I want rock-solid details in court, and, no matter what people say about lawyers, I want my complaint to be completely truthful. I don't have time for exaggeration, and this dungeon bit doesn't ring true to me. Has the basement changed at all in the last 10 years? Did your parents have any work done down there?" I shook my head. "The only renovations in the house that I can remember were the kitchens and bathrooms. The basement wasn't touched." "No, it was finished and modern when we moved into the place. That's why they chose to knock down the other house when they bought that second property. That one was really old." I broke off that sentence. Something bothered me about that idea, and I couldn't figure out what. "A second house," the prosecutor said, her voice hushed. "Yes." Again, my brain snagged on something. "My father wanted a big yard, so he could have an ice rink." I pictured the rink and the yard, and the dark, shadowed corner of the property where I did not like to walk, ever since our yard had doubled in size. "There are doors," I croaked, surprised at myself. "What doors?" the prosecutor asked. "There are..." I swallowed hard, and my throat was like sandpaper. "Those doors in the ground, like in the Wizard of Oz." I slapped my hand down at the edge of the floor plan. "Over there, off the edge of your map. They were part of the old house." The prosecutor locked eyes with her assistant. "Call the investigator. Check the search warrant to make sure that outbuildings are covered." The assistant bolted out of the room, and a terrible shiver ripped down my spine. Those doors had always scared me. I never wanted to go near them. When I was 8 or 9, I thought that monsters lived down there. "Oh my God," I gasped, shoving my hands in front of my mouth. "Whoa," Brian asked, standing up from his chair so fast that it fell over.
"This interview is over. We're done here."
The prosecutor held up two hands in a defensive motion. "Okay, no more questions. And I'm going to step out. The room is yours. Scarlett, you've been very helpful." I didn't answer her, because there were tears stinging my eyes. I'd heard something in that abandoned old cellar. I was in grade school, and I was dawdling outside when I was supposed to be doing my homework. And I'd heard muffled shouting from that corner of my yard. "Oh my God," I said again. "Oh my God."
"Shh, shh,"
Brian said, righting his chair and pulling it close. He sat, wrapping his arms around me.
"Shh, I'm so sorry."
"I think there was somebody down there once," I squeaked. Brian swiped at my tears.
"Sweetie, were you ever down there?"
Violently, I shook my head. "Never. I didn't really know. I didn't know. I didn't know. I didn't know." He pulled my head into his shoulder.
"You didn't know,"
he whispered, rocking me.
"It's okay."
"It's not."
"You didn't hurt anyone, sweetie. You were a child. Just breathe for me. Deep breaths."
Slowly, I forced myself to calm down. "Can we leave now? I really want to go." Maybe if I just got out of this room, the world would stop tilting.
"Whenever you're ready," Brian said. "Let's go and eat somewhere. We need to decompress."
"Decompress," I repeated stupidly. When I looked up, I saw Bridger standing very still across the table from us. His head was cocked to the side, as if trying to solve a puzzle. "Bridge?" He stared for another long moment.
"Sure, Scarlett," he said eventually. "Let's go."
Chapter 19. Take a look at the news. Scarlett. Bridger took us to Capri's, which was a hole-in-the-wall pizza joint where the hockey team often hung out. But it was too early for the bar crowd, so we had a booth in the back corner all to ourselves. We ate a pie with sausage and olives. Bridger drank a beer while Brian and I had Cokes. I snuggled against Bridger's shoulder, feeling worn out. I didn't know what to do with the suspicion that I'd heard something potentially terrible. And so long ago, too. I'd been Lucy's age when I'd started avoiding that corner of the yard.
"The dean said I'll have an apartment over on Osage Street before Christmas," Bridger said. "Apparently things always turn over during the holidays, because some people depart over the semester break. Until then, Lucy will stay one more week in Beaumont, and maybe a week at Hartley's if we need it."
He loosened his tie.
"This week has been my worst nightmare. Thank you both for talking me through it." "You are welcome," Brian said. "I'm happy for you."
My uncle began to play with the straw in his drink then. His face became somber.
"But now we need to spend a little time talking about my worst nightmare."
"What do you mean?" I asked. My uncle turned serious eyes on me.
"There are some things you need to understand about your family."
"Okay." I watched his eyebrows knit together.
"Did you know your father and I were adopted?"
"No. Really?"
"Really. Your grandparents aren't your blood relatives."
He never said anything about that. But that wasn't surprising. My father wasn't a sharer. Not about anything.
"Your so-called grandfather."
Brian cleared his throat.
"It was by design that he adopted two little boys."
"Oh." My insides clenched at the direction that I feared his story was taking. Brian dropped his gaze on the tabletop.
"He wasn't a good man, and it messed both of us up pretty bad. You already know some of what it did to me. I drank and I stole things. But JP..."
He sighed.
"I thought JP had held it together. He was the one of us who seemed to rise above it. He was the big hockey star with the great big career. That's what I thought anyway, until the news broke."
"Oh."
"Shan,
He cut off the word. Scarlett, I had no idea, and I just feel sick about this. I need to ask you something very important.
Okay. Brian looked up at Bridger and hesitated.
I'm sorry, man, but can she and I talk alone for a minute?
Concern crossed Bridger's face.
If that's what Scarlett wants.
I reached across the table to put my hand on Brian's sleeve. No. Whatever you have to say, he can hear. I was sick of hiding things from Bridger.
Sweetie, I need to ask you a really personal question.
No, I said. Brian opened his mouth to argue, but I stopped him. I meant, no, my father never hurt me. Brian's eyes welled up.
Sweetie, it's really important that you tell me the truth.
His eyes flicked to Bridger again.
If he did hurt you, it would be really hard to talk about.
I would tell you the truth. I am telling you the truth. Just like I told Bridger when he asked me the same thing. I'm not lying about this. He still looked wary.
Sometimes people make themselves forget.
I shook my head. Look, he wasn't a good dad, but nothing like that ever happened. He yelled, Brian, about hockey usually, but that's the worst thing I ever saw him do. The tears spilled down Brian's face.
God, Scarlett, I hope that's so. Because that right there is my worst nightmare.
I felt Bridger squeeze my hand, and I squeezed back. Brian blew out a long, shuddering breath.
I would never forgive myself.
He let the sentence die. Bridger was still squeezing my hand. Actually, he squeezed it so hard it was beginning to hurt. Ouch, I said gently. Bridger released my hand immediately. But he was staring hard at Brian. What's wrong, Bridge? I asked. My boyfriend chewed on his lip.
Dude, I have a question.
Brian looked up, wiping his eyes with his hands.
What? Are you and JP blood relatives?
At that, Brian grew very still. He didn't answer Bridger. His gaze fell to the tabletop again. Bridger looked from Brian to me and back again.
Come on, it's a simple yes or no question. You and JP were both adopted. From the same parents or not?
Why? I asked, hating the sudden tension at the table. I didn't understand it. Brian shook his head at Bridger.
Well, shit, Bridger said. Seriously? Are you going to... Hey, back off for a second. Why would I? Bridger challenged.
Back off what? I cried.
Take a good look at Brian, Scarlett. Your adopted uncle.
Brian smacked a fist onto the table.
Give me a fucking minute, hothead.
His face was red.
I'll get there, okay?
You are both scaring me, I said quietly. Bridger forced himself to lean back against the wooden booth. Then he took both of my hands in his.
I'm sorry, Scarlett. Don't be scared.
But I was, because as I studied Brian, and I had a sick feeling that I knew what he was about to say.
Your mother, Brian said slowly,
each word painful.
She and JP made me sign a document as thick as the phone book that I would never tell you this. And when I do, they will try to destroy me. I agreed to keep it a secret because I was a stupid kid, and I thought it was the right thing to do.
The edges of my vision got a little fuzzy because I feared hearing the next part. Brian flexed his hands against the scarred wooden tabletop and dropped his voice.
I got your mother pregnant when we were 19.
Somehow I managed not to gasp out loud.
And by the time she found out about it, I was in jail.
He stared at me with wet eyes.
Sweetie.
So JP isn't... He's not...
JP is not your father. I am.
My throat constricted so suddenly that I had trouble asking the next question. I'm not even related to him? Never before today had it ever occurred to me that my father was not really my father. At the edges of my shock, I could feel an oncoming wave of relief.
I was having the reverse of a Star Wars moment. Darth Vader had no claim on me. Brian shook his head.
That's the only silver lining here.
But the emotions were rolling over me, and it seemed they'd never stop. But you left me with him.
I know, honey, but your mother...
He closed his eyes, looking utterly exhausted.
I'm not excusing it, but it was her idea. She wanted his money and the lifestyle, and he wanted... I never quite knew what he wanted from this deal. He wanted a family. He said he couldn't have children, and maybe that's even true. Now I think he just wanted to be a part of a normal-looking family. He was hiding behind you and your mother. I didn't ask myself why he wanted this weird bargain, but for years, I thought they knew best. You were doing so well.
How do you know? You weren't even there.
I tried, he whispered, but they didn't trust me. One hockey game a year, that's what they gave me.
Tears ran down his face.
I didn't know he was going to hurt kids. I could fucking kill you right now, Bridger said, his voice like gravel. I could fucking kill me right now, Brian spat. This year has been... I couldn't find her. I even came to campus here and walked around, looking for you, sweetie. There was no Shannon Ellison in the directory.
He threw his hands in the air.
I'm so sorry. I went to your house last year, they threw me out. Their thugs threw me out. Their legal team came down on me hard. That asshole Azan had me tailed on and off, just to be intimidating.
Okay, I breathed. I could feel the stress coming off Brian in waves. I reached across the table and grabbed both his hands. Okay, it's okay. Someday the trial will be over. I was telling myself just as much as him.
I'm so sorry, he said again. I was so young, and they convinced me that a rich athlete was a better deal for you than a broke felon.
His voice broke.
They told me I was a shit person, and I believed them.
Reeling, I wished the world would slow down for a minute so I could catch up. I don't know what to say.
You don't have to say anything. When I came here to see you on Friday, I didn't know if I was going to tell you this or not. Then I thought I'd wait until Bridger's case was settled and talk to you about the trial. But we haven't had even a moment's peace.
That was certainly true.
But I haven't ever stopped thinking about you. Not a single day. Your mother told me that if I made myself scarce, they would give you everything. She told this to me during prison visiting hours, honey. I sat there in my shitty orange uniform and believed her.
It still wouldn't quite sink in, except that I could practically hear my mother's voice in that story. She'd rather eat nails than have a baby out of wedlock with a criminal. My whole life, she'd made decisions based upon appearances, and she'd paid the price. God, how depressing. What now? I asked. Brian opened his hands.
No matter what those assholes in New Hampshire try to do to me, my door is open to you. I'm finished being afraid of them.
I need to think, I said, rubbing my temples with two hands. My eyes felt sandy with exhaustion. It had been the most emotional day of my life, and I didn't even know what to say to him. I think we should see each other again over my Christmas break, I suggested. His face softened.
Can we? I just hate dropping this bomb on you and then driving away. But I have to be in Massachusetts tomorrow morning. An ex-con can't ever blow off his job. There might not be another one.
I nodded. I know you took time off from work to help Bridger.
I wanted to.
His voice was rough again.
I'm going to head home now, then. Be safe, sweetie.
He stood up, so I did too. He stepped close to me, hugging me again just as hard as when I'd seen him in the coffee shop a few days ago. That fierce hug made even more sense now than it had then.
I'm sorry, he whispered. I truly am.
I know it, I said. Bridger held out a hand.
Thank you for everything, and I'm sorry I got a little crazy there a minute ago.
Brian shook my boyfriend's hand.
Bridger,
You are a man who protects the people he loves. There's nothing wrong with that. Good night to you both. We'll talk soon.
After Brian left, Bridger and I sat there a minute.
Jesus, are you okay? He asked me.
I will be. My reality had been transformed in the past few hours. It was all going to take some time to understand. But when I stood up from that booth, Bridger stood up too, and he took my hand. Together we walked out of Capri's and through the streets of our college town. As we waited for a traffic light, the warm heel of his hand rested on my lower back, and I felt calm. When I'd driven away from my childhood home on Labor Day, I'd been so alone, but I wasn't anymore. In silence, we walked back to Beaumont. I followed Bridger up to his room, and he kissed me on the forehead at the top of the stairs.
Sleep will help, Bridger said, fishing his keys out of his pocket.
The moment he said it, I yawned on command.
I'm going to tuck you into my bed, he said. And we're going to watch a pointless movie on my computer.
God, don't pick a drama, I teased. We've had enough of that. He grinned.
We are going strictly comedy for a while. You can even choose a chick flick. As long as the couple gets naked before the credits roll, I'll hang with it.
We went inside his room, and I closed the door. If you want naked people, we don't need the movie, I pointed out. Bridger turned to look at me, a smile playing on his lips.
You are a smart girl, aren't you?
He removed his sport coat, hanging it on the back of the desk chair, and then he crossed the room to me, pushing the hair back off my shoulders. He pressed his lips to my cheekbone.
Are you sure you're okay?
He dropped tiny kisses along the side of my face.
I mean, it's not every day that you find out you're your own cousin.
I giggled into his neck. I will be okay, I told him, reaching up to loosen the knot in his tie. As soon as I get your hands on me. He yanked the tie off, and then I went to work on the buttons of his dress shirt. We'd been alone in his room for 4 sad nights. We held each other, but nothing more. Now that Lucy would soon be back, I could think of no better way to use up the last few hours of privacy. I needed to stop thinking about the traumatic revelations of the day, and I wanted his skin against mine, his touch taking me out of my own head. The gleam in Bridger's eye as I undressed him was a thing of beauty. It made me feel powerful. He leaned in to kiss me, and I pushed the shirt off his shoulders. Patience, I demanded, ducking out of the way. I did it just because I could. Stepping back, I eased my own shirt over my head, teasing him. And when I could see him again, that interested gleam in his eyes had ignited into full-blown desire. He was watching me. So I skimmed my hands down my belly and drew the zipper of my jeans down slowly.
You're killing me right now, he said.
Good. I began to ease the fabric down off my hips, but before I got very far, Bridger was there, sinking to his knees in front of me, kissing the deep V of skin I'd revealed below my belly button. Holy hell, that felt good. Then he yanked down my jeans and began nuzzling me, his lips ghosting over my silk panties. A shocked whimper escaped me. I could feel the heat of his breath on all my most sensitive places. Then he opened his mouth, and the friction of warm, wet satin against my body was almost too much. I felt my knees begin to buckle. Strong hands clamped around my hips, and I heard a muffled chuckle.
Lie down, baby.
He set me onto the bed and then, with one big tug, removed my jeans and socks.
You said you wanted my hands on you, he said. How about my mouth?
Without waiting for an answer, he began dropping wet, open-mouthed kisses down my belly and onto my hip. I trembled with anticipation. This was something I'd never done before, and I wondered if maybe I'd be too self-conscious to enjoy it. But Bridger's gentle kisses circled and teased. And when he finally landed at his intended destination, it seemed that the day's revelations weren't over yet. My body lit up like the Christmas tree in the center of Fresh Court, and I pushed all the day's worries right out of my conscious mind. An hour later, we lay collapsed together in a sweaty heap. I traced my fingers along Bridger's ribs, feeling limp and blissed out. I could feel his heart thumping under my ear. From next door, I could hear the muffled sounds of Andy's TV. I hope that fire door is thick. Bridger chuckled.
Will you freak out if I tell you that you're kind of a screamer?
My heart stuttered at the very idea. I still thought of myself as a good girl, a very good girl, in spite of a pile of evidence to the contrary. I won't freak out, I said, while freaking out a little. But I will be embarrassed, and try to rein it in.
That's a shame, Bridger said, because it's really hot.
Do you promise? He rolled so that we could lie eye to eye.
Best thing ever, he whispered. You make me feel like a sexy beast.
You are a sexy beast. His eyes flared.
What would you say if I told you that the beast wanted some celebratory ice cream?
I considered the idea.